Hi, good morning, everyone, and welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We affectionately call ourselves WOOF. I apologize to any cat folks out there. We haven't come up with a cat acronym yet, but we go with WOOF. My name is Brad Hewitt. I use the pronouns he, him, and his, and I'm happy to serve as your lay leader this morning. Today's service has become an annual event where some of the congregations men handle all elements of the service while some of our ladies are at the women's retreat, which is being held this weekend. It gives an opportunity for thoughtfulness and conversation, and we'll have some of that today. Particular thanks to Spencer Ehrman, who assisted with setting this up, and all the folks who are actually participating as well. So, whoever and wherever you are in this moment, whether here or online, whether in this moment or in the future, if you watch this recording later, we want you to know that you're welcome here, regardless of your age or abilities, the color of your skin or where you were born, regardless of whom you love or how you identify your gender, if you do, whatever your spiritual practices may be, or if you have none. We're glad you're here with us this morning. If you are online, please see the order of service that would have been received in your email. If you were not or are not on our email list, you're welcome to email administrator@woof.org, and Jen will get you added. As a reminder, we do have online coffee hour via Zoom at 11:30. Also, that link does come in that same email on Sundays, and in-person coffee or tea, et cetera, downstairs here in person, so you're welcome to join us. Now let's take a few minutes and appreciate and say hello to those who are gathered here today with us in this room, in front or back of you, to your left or your right, those long known and those never known until this moment. If you would please join us for our opening song, There's a River Flowing in My Soul. It's number 1007 in the green, small green book. Twisted Norma Heiser's arm into being our chalice lighter this morning. I'll briefly read an adaptation of We Kindle This Flame by Philip Randall Giles. We kindle this flame as a symbol of the light. We could keep glowing in our lives of appreciation for those who differ, loving kindness for those who suffer, esteem for all those who remind us of our heritage and calling. Thank you, Norma. I'd like to invite Gary Baker up to read a poem.
I'm Gary Baker, and my preferred pronouns are he and him. And you're going to hear today a lot of discussions, thoughts, reflections on adversity. And more importantly, you're going to hear a great deal about how we can overcome adversity. When asked to read the poem If by Rudyard Kipling, it occurred to me that I probably should go online and find out a little bit about that wonderful gentleman. Wonderful in some respects, the fact that he was a colonialist, and not such a good respect, but interesting enough, when I went on the internet, there was a document that was 47 pages long. And I thought, you probably don't want a 47-page lecture. Maybe I could boil this down a little bit. And I also thought, boy, when I pass over to the other shore someday, I hope I get like 0.47 of a page that's recognized. Rudyard Kipling was struck by misfortune many more times than most of us ever would be, fortunately. He went through a bankruptcy in England. He was born in 1865 and died in 1936. But his savings collapsed in England. Thereafter, he penniless, he moved to the United States and did well there for a while until he hit an adversity, a family issue that got a lot of press, particularly bad press. He left the United States shortly thereafter to go back to England, and on that trip, his daughter, 7 years old, died in transit of pneumonia. He was struck again when he became involved in another financial issue, and he lost on that one as well. In 1907, however, a great comeback from his wonderful years of writing and poems, and won the Nobel Prize in Literature. He was a proponent of British involvement in World War I, and although his son John failed the medical exam to go to war, he twisted someone and got John enrolled, and a year later he was killed. His life was one replete with trials, hardships, and sorrows, which one could never fault anyone for, but beneath time and time again he overcame. This particular poem, called If, was published 3 years after he won the Nobel Prize, encapsulates the lessons he learned and considered to be the keys of his success. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied to, don't deal in lies, or being hated, and don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good, don't talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster, and treat those two imposters just the same. If you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things that gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it one turn, pitch and toss, and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings, but not lose your common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son.
Good morning. Thank you, Gary. My name is Howard Baldwin. My pronouns are he and him. I'm on the board and in the men's group, which, as you know, put together this service this morning. We now go from the tribulations of Rudyard Kipling to a children's story. I'm not sure the tribulations are quite the same. And now this is going to be interesting because I am going to have to read and use the clicker at the same time. And frankly, I don't know if this is... It would have been possible when I was younger, but I'm not sure it is now. Sorry? You think? I can't even find it. I can't even figure out how to turn it on. And you told me how to do that. That's on. Sorry. So one of the things is that this story that I'm going to read from... Sorry, let me back up a second. When I do a reading later when the children are gone, it's going to be from a Washington Post article entitled Men Are Lost. And we'll go into that later. But I just wanted to show on a lighter side that not only can men be lost, but bears can be lost as well. So this is from The Bear and St. Bears and the Papa's Day Surprise. It's a long book, so I've excerpted it. I think I got the right parts, but anybody who's read it will go, wait, he missed something. So believe me, it's the Reader's Digest version. So here we go. Though, in his opinion, Mother's Day is a fine and proper holiday and a worthy tribute to the institution of motherhood, he didn't think much of Father's Day. Let's just skip Father's Day this year, Papa Bear said. It's just a scheme to get folks down to the mall and buy lots of gifts, not to mention a bunch of icky, sticky Father's Day cards. Oh, my God, I did it. That's fine with us, said Mama. It's a busy time for me and the quilting bee coming up, and with the school year ending, the Cubs are going to be pretty busy, too. Then it's agreed, said Papa. We are not going to make a fuss about Father's Day. Papa would never have admitted it, but he was beginning to hope that Mama and the Cubs wouldn't worry about his opinion regarding Father's Day. He even looked in drawers and closets for hidden presents. And I was supposed to ask the kids to come up, but don't do it now. Now it was the day before Father's Day. Papa was on his way to his shop when he noticed the Daddy Robin. Mama Robin had laid the eggs, and the Daddy was sitting on them. Mr. Robin, said Papa, I think Mama and the Cubs are up to something, and I think I know what it is. It's Father's Day. They're going to surprise me. Mr. Robin didn't say anything. He just sat there. Papa knew what Mama and the Cubs were doing. They were pretending to skip Father's Day. Well, two could play at that game. Tomorrow morning, when he woke up to breakfast in bed and lots of presents and cards on Father's Day, he would pretend to be surprised. But the next morning, he didn't have to pretend. He really was surprised. There was no breakfast in bed. There were no gifts and cards. But wait a minute. What was that delicious smell coming up from the kitchen? It was his favorite food, French fried honeycomb. There was going to be a Father's Day breakfast. It just wasn't going to be in bed. But the French fried honeycomb wasn't for him at all. Mama explained it was a gift for the new family down the road. Papa went out and sat on the front steps. The Daddy Robin flew by. He was carrying a worm to his newly hatched chicks. Happy Father's Day, Mr. Robin, said Papa, for all the good it's going to do us. At that moment, Mama and the Cubs came down the front steps. Where are you going? Asked Papa. What about breakfast? We're all going for brunch at the Grismore Grill. Huh? Said Papa. The Grismore Grill, please, said the Cubs as they piled into the car. When they arrived, folks were lined up at the entrance. Look, Papa, said Papa, there's a sign over the door that says, Welcome, Dads. So there is, said Mama with a big grin. There was a much bigger sign inside. It said, Welcome to the Papa's Day Surprise. It was painted on the roll of paper the Cubs had gotten for the school project, and there was a stage with a long table. Go ahead, Papa, said the Cubs, up on the stage with the other Papas. He found a chair with his name on it, at the long table. Other papas were on the stage with him. Lizzie Bruin's papa, Cousin Fred's papa, even Too Tall's papa. Other papas filled the seats, and the food? All papa's favorites. French fried honeycomb, honey-cured salmon, honeyed squash. There we go. There's his seat. Someone began to speak. It was Mayor Honeypot. And now we shall hear from those who put this wonderful surprise together. Our first speakers will be Brother and Sister Bear. Brother and Sister cleared their throats and read a poem. It was on the special paper they had taken from Papa's shop. To the best Papa Bear in the whole wide world, you are big and strong and true. And no matter what we do, we know we can depend on you. You cheer us on when we are glad. You cheer us up when we are sad. You are always there for us to help, advise, and care for us. Happy Father's Day. Papa looked out over the audience, but he could hardly see. His eyes were misty, and he had a lump in his throat as big as a cantaloupe. After Brother and Sister read their poem, it was Lizzie Bruin's turn to say something about her dad. After Lizzie came Cousin Fred. As the Cubs read their tributes, Papa thought about all the wonderful moments he had shared with his family. Well, they weren't always wonderful, but they certainly were moments. Suddenly, there was a sound of applause and cheering. It brought Papa down to the here and now of the Papa's Day surprise. Cubs and Mamas were on their feet. It had been a wonderful party and a wonderful Father's Day.
I invite you to turn inward and see what rises to the surface this morning. Whether it is joy, sorrow, or some combination or variation of the two, you're welcome to come to the bowl of water here at the table that symbolizes our community's ability to surround us and celebrate our joys and help us hold our sorrows. Choose a stone, invest in it the pain or happiness in you, or both, and drop it in as it settles to the water and joins the other stones there. Please join me in our affirmation of gratitude and giving.
Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
And now we're going to have a song.
My child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it, and as he grew, he'd say, I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad, come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today, I've got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And as he walked away, but his smile never dimmed, he said, I'm gonna be like him. Yeah, you know I'm gonna be like him. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you're coming home, Dad, I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. Well, he came from college just the other day. So much like a man, I just had to say, son, I'm proud of you. Can you sit for a while? He shook his head and he said with a smile, what I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later, can I have them, please? And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. You know we'll have a good time then. I've long since retired, my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said I'd love to, Dad, if I can find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids have the flu, but it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy when you're coming home, son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. We know we'll have a good time then.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Graham. That took me back. As I promised earlier, I have a reading from a Washington Post article by a journalist named Christine Emba, E-M-B-A, the title of which is Men Are Lost. Here's a map out of the wilderness. It's a long, very well-researched article. I'm happy to send it to anyone in PDF if they want it. Last summer, a Psychology Today article pointed out that, quote, dating opportunities for heterosexual men are diminishing as relationship standards rise, unquote. No longer dependent on marriage as a means to financial security or even motherhood, women are, quote, increasingly selective, leading to a rise in lonely single young men, more of whom now live with their parents than a romantic partner, end quote. Perhaps as a result, men are having a widespread identity crisis, as if they didn't know how to be, Emba quotes an Ivy League doctoral student, who remembers an undergraduate requesting a private conversation for guidance. The first question this kid asked me is, what the heck does good masculinity look like? I'll be honest with you, I did not have an answer for that. What's the path forward? In Emba's ideal, the mainstream could embrace a model that acknowledges male particularity and difference, but doesn't denigrate women to do so. It's a vision of gender that's not androgynous, but still equal, and relies on character, not just biology. And it acknowledges that certain themes, protector, provider, even procreator, still resonate with many men and should be worked with, not against. How to implement this? It will be slow, she says. A new masculinity will be a norm shift. And that takes time. The women's movement succeeded in changing structures and aspirations, but the social transformation didn't take place overnight. And empathy will be required, as grating as that might feel. It is harder to be a man today, and in many ways, that is a good thing. Finally, the freer sex is being held to a higher standard. I would like to introduce another member of our men's group, Wade McJacobs, who will be delivering today's sermon.
I want to start with something I learned from my wife, and that is take a mindful moment. Before I give my talk, I want to thank the men's group for trusting me. We've been talking about men's issues. Now, there's a thought, men's issues. In popular culture, we get the phrase women's issues a lot, and we all know what that means. But men's issues, not so much. But that's what we've been talking about in men's group for quite some time now. And I made an observation that of something that kept happening. And someone would make a statement, make an observation about being male or whatever, and then they would end the statement with the phrase, "I don't know." And then someone else would respond and add to the conversation, and they would end their statement with, "Well, I don't know." And then a third person or a fourth person would go on, and so frequently the ending comment was, "I don't know." So I thought it would be appropriate to give you a little bit of a progress report about what's been happening in our conversations. And the reality is, we really don't know. We don't know what to think. I mean, heck, we don't know how to think in today's culture. You see, the standards are gone. Or actually, they still exist, but they've been negated. They've been rejected. They're not legitimate anymore. I mean, we used to have, you know, the Chuck Norris standard. And we knew enough because we're intelligent enough to reject it. But at least it was there. It was something that we could interact with. That doesn't exist anymore in any kind of a legitimate way. So that raises a very interesting question that men, and not just men, but our whole culture is going through. And that is, what happens when the model for how to be is gone? That model, the Chuck Norris model is the name that I'm using, but that model's been around for not just a few years. I mean, that's been around for millennia. And it's not good anymore. So what happens when there is no reference? No reference point, no model, no standard. Well, I want to explore just one element that men have, as part of their model, traditional model, have had, and that is as a solution provider. And I'm not claiming that we're good at it. And if you look back at the things men have been doing to solve society's problems over the past millennia, the evidence is not good. I mean, we've solved problems by going to war. We've hurt people. We've hurt women. We've hurt children. We've hurt ourselves. We've hurt the earth. And yet, despite this apparent stupidity and inability for men to solve problems, that is still a recognized role that we are to take, that men are to take in our society. Interesting story comes to mind in this. Family reunions. My family, Western Kansas, farm family. And the men would always end up hanging out at the front end of a pickup truck. The hood is open. There's some great photographs of the backside of men hanging over the front side of a pickup truck. And as a child, I remember seeing my dad in that group. And I thought, that's really interesting, because he didn't know squat about cars. He was a math professor at university. Could not change oil in a car. But what was interesting is that he was expected to be able to. He was expected to be competent, and not only competent, but confident. So his compromise was through intellect. He could analyze how an engine works. He could tell you the engineering and the physics and the chemistry about it. But he couldn't change a spark plug. So yeah, men are struggling. But let me do a little exercise here. Don't raise your hands. But when you visualize white men struggling, Isn't it true that some of you might roll your eyes and say, it's about time? I mean, I do, right? Very few of us would go, aw, you poor thing. And yet, from the perspective of society at large, not necessarily from the WOOF community, but in society at large, we are expected to be competent and confident. And that has been a problem. Because when we are not, which happens all too often, we end up doing stupid things. And it's no surprise that men, particularly white men, are 4 times more likely to commit suicide today than women. You see, as women and other groups are rising and being empowered, men are being disempowered. And we don't do that well. We're supposed to be competent and confident. Interesting comparison to kind of highlight this contrast of what's going on. Think about pre-wedding activities. Women go to a wedding shower. Now, I know today men go to wedding showers too, but when you visualize a wedding shower, the term wedding shower, what comes to mind is a group of women having fun and sharing gifts and stories and laughter and all that kind of stuff. Now think about what men have to go through. They call it a stag party. I've never been to one. I was scared to go to them because I didn't know how to behave like that. But the image of a stag party is debauchery. And the comments that are made to men who are supposed to be competent and confident, the comments that are made to them is they're losing their freedom. What a horrible image. You see, when a group of men get together, they are constantly, and I'm not saying in the WOOF community not necessarily, but in society at large, when a group of men get together, they are, the individual in the group is constantly making a calculation of whether they are going to come off looking manly or not. So if a group of men are together and they say, let's go for a hike this weekend, the visualization inside men's head is one of conquering. We're going to climb mountains. We're going to cross raging rivers. A group of men sitting around talking about going for a hike are not thinking about a walk through the Rose Garden. It's that calculation that men are constantly having to make about whether I'm truly a man just because I want to go on a walk through a rose garden. You see, what's the dilemma that's happening inside us is we truly are coming from a place of heart. We want to solve problems. We want to be compassionate. We have tremendous love. So we don't reject that role. But as women are being empowered, men are being disempowered. I had a very interesting personal experience of this back in my college days, which is more years ago than I want to think about right now. But I was in a car heading to an event, and it just happened that this car was all women except me. And we're driving to this event, and we get a flat tire. Well, what am I supposed to do, right? I'm a guy, and so I think I'm going to change the flat tire. So I get out of the car, go to the trunk. This is what men do. Open the trunk, start pulling out the spare, And it was very clear that this particular group of women did not know how to change a flat tire. And that's fine. So I just was doing what I was expected to do. Not only expected to do, but to be competent and confident in my ability to do it. One of the women came over to me, put her arm over my shoulder and said, "Why don't we go for a little walk?" And I said, "But we've got to change the tire." And she said, "No, that's okay. They'll figure it out." And what was fascinating at that time, when I think back on it, was not that I was relieved of that responsibility. That was fine. I was okay with that. I was great to let women do the changing of the tire. It's not something that I enjoy doing. But what was fascinating is that I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to think about it. So yes, this woman took me aside and said, "Let's go for a walk," so I could go for a walk. But how was I to think now that I was no longer had this job of fixing the problem? I didn't have a different way of thinking. Now at this point, I just want to make a comment on the side. I'm going to take a slight diversion for just a moment because I want to make a comment about what's happening with the LGBTQ community in this discussion. Everything I've been saying so far has kind of been this dualistic men, women, male, female, masculine, feminine kind of thing. And what LGBTQ community is doing, which is amazing, is that it's creating something other than the duality. And there's something to be learned there. And I don't know what to call it. I mean, in my ignorance, I refer to it as a continuum, but I don't even know if that's accurate. And the languaging about this is completely new. And I think that's really exciting, and there's a lot to be learned there, and I claim ignorance in that. And that actually gives me some hope. Change is definitely happening. These are exciting times. We are in an adventure of how to be, how to think. New roles are being created, and it's going to be awkward. So I started this talk by telling you I wanted to give you a progress report how men are doing in our discussions. And the progress report can be summed up in three words. We don't know. We don't know how to think. We don't know what to think. We are stymied. But what's exciting about that is that makes it the adventure. Pema Chodron says, we should become comfortable with being uncomfortable. So on a personal note, I will just say, I am really uncomfortable. But that's okay. In fact, maybe that is the new model. Maybe the new model is, we don't know. But we're in it together. And we're going to work on it together. And we're going to help each other out. We don't know where we're going. We don't know how to be. But we're on an adventure. So I may not be Chuck Norris. But I can take a step. I can move forward. I can grab hands and move together. And that's exciting. We can be human. We can be humane. We can be kind. We can move forward in our ignorance as we figure this thing out. It's dynamic. It's exciting. And it's not always going to be easy. But we can do it together, and I'm really excited about that. In the men's group, we had a little discussion about whether we should open this up to some question and answers, thoughts, sharing thoughts, and we decided we would do so. So Brad's going to help me out here. I don't know how to do that. But if people have thoughts or questions that they want to share.
I will be Donahue. For anybody who knows who that is, run around. So we've probably run a tad over this today, but we'll get about 10 minutes. How about this? We'll give it 10 minutes for questions, and I don't know, afterwards, Wade will be around. You're certainly welcome to grab him in the corner and make him really uncomfortable. No, don't do that. ask questions on that. But let's do that. And for those of you who weren't here pre-pandemic, we frequently did this, and I loved it. I thought it was a great back and forth, and on a regular basis, if the speaker was up to it, we had an opportunity for questions and answers if we had the time after a sermon or a speech or whatnot. So it really is awesome. So take advantage, and if you just throw your hand up, I'll come and give you the mic.
So, thank you, Wade. Working together, did the women change the tire successfully?
Well, we made it to the event. But I honestly don't remember how we got there. I mean, you know, that's one of the things that's so fascinating about being ignorant, is that solutions can come in a variety of ways. And perhaps what they did is they called and got a ride from someone else. I honestly do not remember. I mean, it was like 50 years ago, so.
One of the first things I remember when I came to Wolf was that Betty Daggett had a group, and it was a group with men and women. Tom Needham, do you remember? And these things were coming up a long time ago, but you couldn't get as close as you are to it. And my thought is, at some point, men and women are going to get together and talk about the things you're talking about. I hope.
So I have two kids. I have a 19-year-old son and then a 16-year-old trans son. But my 19-year-old, he's really struggling. He was in high school in the pandemic and all this stuff. But all the girls that are saying that, you know, they're bi or they're, you know, he's really struggling to figure out how to navigate all of that. And struggles with a little bit with having the brother because of everything he's experiencing, but it's yeah, no answers.
You know, we human beings have been here, what, 300,000 years? You know, as we crawl out the cave and become urbanized and city, you know, our role has changed at every stage. Like in my own life, I was raised in a Chinese culture, in a Confucian society. Then when I came to the United States, I'm the Western. The role of a person in China is different than the role of people in the Western world. And we're always changing. And I'm 91 years old now, and that was when I came here. I had to learn how to speak English. I looked different. I had different value. But now as I look back, we're always changing. Both in men's role and women's role. It's not the same.
So you kept saying that women are being empowered and men are disempowered, and that really struck a chord with me, because I think that when, let's say, a group or one person's light shines brighter, that doesn't necessarily dim the others. And you said that the answer was, I don't know. And in my head, it was like, ask women.
Oh, one online. I love that. We have an online question. Or, let's see, can you just tell me? Instead of feeling disempowered, can't men learn to, this is from Gary, can't men learn to collaborate with strong women? This seems plain and simple. Oh, Gary, seems plain and simple. But yes, I like that statement. But valid. Just a minute, listen.
Okay. Mostly I just wanted to say thank you, because ever since I went to the Barbie movie and listened to America's Speech, I've been wanting to hear the male version of the frustration of being a man in society, and today I got it.
Thank you.
Yeah, a lot of gratitude for the transparency and openness. And I also wanted to say, you said men are being disempowered as if that were a given. And I hope that is not true. I would hope that men are being freed from so many of the constraints, some of which you talked about. And that feels like the opposite of disempowerment to me.
Can I make a comment about that? It's come up a couple of times. It's not, it has to do with an issue of what society, the role society has put men in. They've put them in the role of being in control and being in empowered and being powerful and being competent. And it's that perception of what we're supposed to be that is the challenge, not what we can be. Yes, of course we should be collaborating. Yes, we should turn to women for the wisdom that they've had all these years and that we've rejected. Those seem clear answers. But men have to change within themselves, and men and groups have to change in how they interact. And it needs to be okay to go for a walk in the Rose Garden. And it needs to be okay to admit that I don't know how to change a flat. I don't know how to change the oil. And currently among men, and often not men at a community like this, but among men in society at large, it is simply not okay to admit that. And that's what I meant by your men are constantly making this calculation. Am I being a man, or am I going to be seen as a man if I admit that I don't know? And that's the challenge.
So I think what both Gary J. is saying about collaboration and what Wade is saying about men in larger society, we need to hold multiple ideas in our heads, and I think men in general really need to work on that, because, you know, when Wade was saying about men feeling disempowered, women physically feel that disempowerment. We've had our rights taken away. Maybe us as older women don't feel it as keenly as younger women do, but when I talk to millennials, when I talk to Gen Z women, you know, having Roe v. Wade go away, it's crushing, and seeing the number of abortions go up exponentially in states that allow it, that's just crushing, right? So, I mean, obviously, we all need to work on our we don't knows, and we all need to get comfortable in the uncomfortableness of life, right?
All right, we'll come down this row and do a couple more.
thank you, Wade. And one of the things that I think it's wonderful that there's a men's group at WOF. One of the things I've noticed, I do a lot of work with grieving people, and things like Compassionate Friends, which is, parents who have lost children. One thing I noticed that 90% of the people who show up are women, because men, if you're confident and competent, you can't share with other men, you can't share with anybody, and it's very isolating. And so I think one of the things we don't know, one of the answers is to be vulnerable. And to say, I don't know, and to ask for help. So, you know, this men's group is, and all men's groups, I'm part of the Mankind Project, which is another big men's group. It's a good start.
Thanks. Thanks very much for your talk this morning. And I think it's great to have men that are meeting and discussing themselves among themselves of the changes that are happening in our society to the roles of men and women. But, you know, as I say that, I recognize in my own experience that most of the learning that I've done to lead me away from the Chuck Norris image that I had in abundance when I was a little kid has been at the instruction and insistence of women that I've known. And I want to thank them for having done that. You know, it certainly has changed my behavior in some ways. And I am reminded, not infrequently, that I have more to learn from my current partner.
Thank you for your sermon today. My statement is simple. The patriarchy hurts everyone.
Including those who are perpetrating that patriarchy. Anybody else?
Wow, one more.
Thank you for your talk. I have a problem with the disempowerment statement when we look at our government. There is no equality in the Senate, in the House, in any legislature or any body of government around. You will not find 50% women. And that is power.
Thank you, everyone.
So we'll close out with a round of Hine Matov, which is a Jewish, it's tune number 392 in your hymnal. And I find this interesting because, of course, the Unitarian translation changed the masculine pronouns to from he to people. And I used to sing this song to my kids as a lullaby to go to sleep. So I'm sharing this with you in that vein. So we will go through this once, and then we'll split into a round. Everybody on this side of the room, follow me. Everybody on the other side, follow Brad and Matt. And we'll see how this goes.
Which language are we singing?
In the Hebrew, yeah.
What number is it?
392.
Okay.
In the Gray Hymnal. Everybody ready? Yeah? Okay. Hine matov umanayim shevitahim gam yahad. Hine matov umanayim shevitahim gam yahad. Hine matov shevitahim gam yahad. Hine matov shevitahim gam yahad. Hine matov manayim shevitahim gam yahad. Hine matov umanayim shevitahim gam yahad. Hine matov shevitahim gam yahad. Hine shevitahim gam yahad. Hine matov umanayim shevitahim gam yahad. Hine matov umanayim shevitahim gam yahad. Hine shevitahim gam yahad. Hine matov shevitahim gam yahad.
And now we extinguish the chalice. but not the conviction or the resonance of our principles. These we will carry with us until we meet again. Carry the flame of peace and love until we meet again. Carry the flame of peace and love until we meet again.